Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI appeals to world leaders to have the courage of their convictions to help the impoverished nations of the world. A contemporary art exhibition portrays the hidden world of Catholic religious orders in Ireland. And Father Jim Brand explains why one and one isn't two, it's infinity. Looking forward to this week's UN Summit on the Millennium Development Goals, Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday appealed to world leaders to have the courage of their convictions to help the impoverished nations of the world. Emma McCarthy has this report.
Cari fratelli e sorelle,
Pope Benedict opened his Angelus this Sunday by drawing people's memories back to the 19th of April 2005, the day of his election to St. Peter's Chair, when he presented himself to a crowded St. Peter's Square as a humble worker in the vineyard of the Lord. Reflecting on that very parable presented in this Sunday's Gospel, the Pope went on to trace the lesson it contains. What it means to really work for the common good, that those who consider themselves first among men may finish last, that the least, most humble of God's creatures will be first in the kingdom of God, and most importantly, those who only work for earthly reward will never know the value of this priceless treasure.
Angelus Domini non servit Maria.
It was an incisive introduction to the two appeals the Pope would launch following the Angelus prayer.
I paesi caraibici, in particolare Haiti.
His concern for the populations of the Caribbean and the southern swathes of the United States still struggling in the wake of devastating storms, in particular his appeal for aid for Haiti, considered the least or poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere.
Giovedì prossimo, 25 settembre, si terrà a New York.
And his appeal to the leaders of the First World, who are set to gather in New York next week, to examine the progress of promises they made over 8 years ago to eradicate global poverty.
Vorrei rinnovare l'invito.
From his summer residence in Castel Gandolfo, Pope Benedict renewed his appeal to world leaders to courageously apply all necessary measures to eradicate extreme poverty, hunger, ignorance, the scourge of disease, which above all affects the most vulnerable.
Pur esigendo particolari sacrifici.
Aware that in this time of global economic difficulty, such a commitment requires serious sacrifices, Pope Benedict urged the leaders to consider the important benefits these sacrifices would produce in the development of nations desperately in need of foreign aid, in furthering peace between nations, and in the well-being of the entire planet. In short, as the Gospel parable teaches us, the first nations of the world putting the least before them for the common good. I'm Emma McCarthy.
Thanks there to Emma McCarthy for that report. I was browsing through the cultural section of the daily papers when I came across news of a contemporary art exhibition entitled Faith. Well, I could hardly skip that, could I? The artist, the article said, had spent 2.5 years photographing inside the churches, convents, and abbeys of Ireland. She was granted, it continued, unprecedented access to the private worlds of the religious in their places of work and prayer, some of which had never before been seen by the outside world. Faith, the article concluded, is a compelling portrayal of a hidden world, the Catholic religious orders of Ireland. The exhibition was scheduled to open that very day, so I called up the gallery in the hope the artist would be present for the inauguration. I was lucky. Yes, Jackie Nickerson is here, they said, and she's willing to talk to you. I whizzed round to the Contemporary Art Gallery hosting the show to find myself immersed in an atmosphere of serenity and joy. The stark white walls and floors of the gallery were the perfect backdrop to Jackie Nickerson's stunning works. The first room, entirely dedicated to portraits, showed a careful selection of large colour photographs of apparent simplicity. Side by side, the gentle faces of young seminarians, the austere gaze of a Mother Superior and her smiling novices, the spirited or muted look in the eyes of monks and priests of different orders. The second room was dedicated to images of places and objects for daily rituals and communal devotion. The visual language I read in the pamphlet I was given is based on the extensive research of religious art and Christian symbolism that provides the foundation of the series. I was immersed in contemplation of the stunning works that surrounded me when Jackie herself walked in. A big smile and sparkling blue eyes, she immediately told me how excited she was to be presenting faith here in Rome. But first of all, I said, tell me something of yourself and of your background.
Yeah, hello. I've come to Rome. I'm very excited to be here. I'm here with my husband, and we've never been here before. And yes, it's been a long journey getting here, but a good one.
It's a long professional journey. Are you referring to?
I guess so. I started out as a fashion photographer, and I started my career in New York, and I was a fashion photographer for about 15 years, and then I had a sort of an epiphany. I went to Africa, and that completely changed my life.
You were a very successful fashion photographer. You're very modest. Jackie worked for Vogue, for Elle, for all the big magazines. Tell me about the epiphany.
It came about because the mother of a friend of mine called me up one day, and she was originally from Zimbabwe, and she said to me, you know, I think I'm having a bit of a nervous breakdown and I want to go home, and will you come with me, because I don't want to go on my own. And so I said yes, I would go with her. And she originally came from a farm just outside of Harare. And she said, would I stay with her for a couple of months, because she was basically, you know, a stranger in her own country. She hadn't been about there for many years. So I ended up staying in Africa for about 3 years. I bought a little pickup truck and I started to travel all around southern Africa, to Malawi, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, South Africa. And it was just a fantastic experience.
Yeah. And what came of that journey?
I actually had just planned to change my life and sort of not do any more photography, but I started to take pictures. And but at the end of the 3 years, I couldn't stay in Africa any longer because I had visa problems. So I came back to London, and all of these pictures that I had taken actually became a book through default, really, because I had no idea how to make a book or do anything, you know, with them. But they became a book called Farm, and published by Jonathan Cape, and that was sent me on a new journey.
We're actually in the gallery. They're beautiful, striking photographs, both chromatically and because of the intensity. Tell me how long it took you to put these photographs together. I understand that you entered convents in places that are not normally open to the public eye. You spent time with these people?
Yes, that's right. Well, I went to live in Ireland in 2002. My husband is Irish, and I was very interested when I arrived there about, you know, the political situation and how Irish life was changing so much. And it was really my father-in-law, who is a devout Catholic, said to me one day, will you come up to Mass with me? And it was to a convent near where he lives in Stillorgan in County Dublin. So it just so happened there were a group of Carmelite nuns who were staying there. They wouldn't normally be in that convent, but their own monastery was being restored. So I saw them turn around at the end of the Mass, and they sort of had this really beautiful look on their face. I mean, they looked so happy, and it was just such a lovely look. And it made me think, and I thought, my goodness, you know, they've got something that the modern world really doesn't have. You know, they are living by a rule, and they're obviously getting so much out of it. And that's where my interest started.
And then Jackie told me a friend of hers in New York asked her if she wanted to take some photographs of Ireland. So Jackie decided to start by doing portraits of the religious, and then, she said, the project just grew and grew.
And yes, I was privileged to be able to go into all kinds of different orders. It took a long time, but we got there.
We have portraits here of nuns, of monks, of priests, of seminarians, maybe, are they?
Yes, yeah.
Is there any particular one that you'd like to talk about that you remember?
We have a book called Faith, It's published by Steidl, and that all these pictures are in that book. And on the cover of the book is this sister, Sister Patrice, and she's a poor Claire. She's from St. Damien's Monastery in County Dublin. And I have to say that my experience going into that place really was very intense and was a real turning point in the book, because they're kind of the toughest nuns, you know, out of any order that I went to. And I'm saying that it was a good way, because, you know, they're so strict with themselves. You know, they never go out, they don't have vacations, they don't have anything but just what they have in their community. And the intensity of feeling in that place was sort of incredible. And yes, I think that when I took that picture of her, she sort of showed me a way forward, you know, how to progress with the pictures.
I read in a kind of introduction to the exhibition here that you felt as though they were part of a spirituality that was larger than themselves.
Oh yeah, that's definitely true. Yeah. I think that because, you know, their individuality becomes sort of less and less and less. Not that they're not whole people with, you know, and especially, actually it's really interesting, because especially the nuns, you know, they were explaining to me that sometimes they feel that their problems as human beings are sort of overlooked because they have this spiritual life. You know, and they say, no, we're still women and we still have problems that regular women have, and the same, you know, with the priests. And but at the end of the day, they do have the, yes, they do, because they have this very, very intense spiritual life, you know, it's sort of, they become part of something that's bigger than themselves. You do get that sense, you know.
They're also aesthetically very striking, your pictures, both chromatically and also just the way you've posed these people in these portraits. Was it difficult to work with them?
They were completely easy to work with. I mean, I have a battle with myself, you know, that's where the difficulty lies. And it was difficult to get to the visual language of the series that I felt really represented, because I'm sort of trying to capture, you know, a sort of, you know, what lies beneath the surface. It's sort of what lies beneath the obvious. And in a lot of places that I went into, you know, the surface wasn't all that nice sometimes. You know, it was very austere, it was very institutional, and it took a long time, and it was quite a struggle to sort of figure out how to get to what I felt was the sort of the truth of the situation. And what really helped me, my sister-in-law sent me this book by Fra Angelico, who is a brilliant artist and, of course, a Renaissance painter. And when I looked at his colours and I looked at what he had done, my eyes sort of opened and I saw all the same colours in the convents and the monasteries. And actually, they were using all the same sacred colours, all the blues and the pinks and the reds and the greens. And I thought, that's what to concentrate on. So that's how come we ended up with this aesthetic.
The overall impression is of great serenity and of joy.
Yeah, I would say that that's pretty much the feeling. Yes, it was the feeling. It's because it's not really documentary photography. It's more, I think with documentary photography, you go in and you try and take lots of pictures of what's, you know, obvious in front of you. I mean, I would hope that the viewer would get a sense of what it is to kind of sit in a room in a monastery or in a convent and see how the world reacts around you. You know, it's sort of a more of feeling and of a sort of an essence of what it is to be in a convent or a monastery. And yeah, I think that the overall sense of peace was overwhelming. I mean, not everybody was happy and not every place was fantastic. And I mean, there were certainly some places that sort of made me shudder, and there were some places that didn't work, but the overall was definitely, it was a lesson, and it was a part of life that I had certainly never had the privilege to see before, or, you know, had that feeling before.
Have you had any kind of reaction from the religious themselves?
I've been very straightforward with this whole project, and when, just before the book came out, I did revisit a lot of the places where I had been allowed in to take pictures, and I showed them all the pictures. But you have to kind of realize that this is contemporary art, and I think that some of the communities got a little bit of a shock when they saw how austere the the pictures were, because it's basically somebody sitting in front of a wall or somebody in a room, and they're very quiet and they're very still. And I suppose normal photography would be somebody in an environment or laughing or, you know, something with a little bit more going on. So I think they got a little bit of a shock, but they didn't dislike it. You know, I mean, modern art for most of us is quite difficult to understand anyway, so they're no exception, of course. But they didn't stop me from doing anything. They didn't say, oh, please don't use it because we think it's just too austere. Or they were very, you know, easy with me to use whatever I like. And I send them all the invitations and I send them everything. I haven't had a lot of response back. I think they're kind of keeping quiet, keeping their heads down. But I certainly haven't had anything negative. I haven't had any negative response at all. And I've had a few lovely cards and letters and, you know, saying we saw the pictures, we saw the book. They're lovely. Thank you very much. So,
now, this is the portrait room, let's say. The next room is the room in which there are more pictures of environments, of people, of convents, as you were saying. Yeah. This with the habits, yes, is very striking.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's... there are a few pictures in this room that might be a little bit surprising, but it's basically... The picture that you're referring to is a sort of a rack of cloaks, mass cloaks that are hanging up on a wall. But it's just to get the feeling of that particular situation with the light coming in, and it's all sort of yellow and pink, and there were lots of little corners in convents that are, you know, you would normally just be walking through, but there was a sort of stillness and a sort of serenity, and especially with the cloaks, it was a sort of the sense of community that, you know, there were all these cloaks hanging up on the peg, and it was just appealed to me, and I don't know why it appealed to me. You know, there's lots of times when I was walking around. For instance, there's this picture here, and it's just in the corner of an infirmary, and all the furniture is covered with blue sheets, and there's a statue that's sort of covered with a white sheet, but it's very quiet, and it just appealed to me, and I don't know why. And that happened quite a lot. I'd be walking around and something would just speak to me, and so I took the picture.
Just one last question, Jackie. After having spent two and a half years involved in this project, do you think you've changed in any way? What has it left with you?
Well, of course, yeah. I think, you know, you invest a huge part of your personal life into a project like this, and you can't help by being affected by it, you know. It's very interesting because I always try to remain neutral in whatever situation. I'm not a Catholic, I'm not particularly religious, but there was a deep sense of spirituality in a lot of the places that I went to, and it really made me reassess my own spiritual ideas, I guess. You can't help but be affected by something like this. And I think that it also sort of showed that faith actually works, whatever your personal belief is. I mean, it's a definite. It's more than an ethereal idea. It's something that really does work, and that was very comforting.
Yes, comforting is one description that comes to mind, but so does strong, content, joyful, serene, peaceful. Personally, I was happy when I walked away. Beauty does that to me. And Jackie's photographs really are beautiful. What with the colours of Fra Angelico and Jackie Nicholson's eye and capacity to capture some of the nuances of the essence of faith. And now Father Jim Brand reflects on the deep spirituality of the AA's 12-step programme.
Hello, it's Father Jim. One of the areas of spirituality that has touched me enormously is the 12th step program. I mentioned before my father was an alcoholic. I'm not myself, but a family that's had alcoholism in it is always affected. And there are various groups for the sons and daughters of alcoholics. Because in an alcoholic home, nothing really seems to be what it is. We gave the impression as a family, that we were the funniest, brightest, happiest family in the world. Got on well with everyone, cracked jokes. We were the life and soul of all the parties, but behind our front door, there was a deadly secret. We could never invite friends home because we never knew in what condition my father would be. When he was good, he was very, very good, and when he was bad, he was horrid. And as children, we used to sit on the stairs waiting for him to come back from his club after his work. And we'd be nervously, teeth chattering, waiting for that key to go into the lock. And immediately we knew what sort of an evening it was going to be. Heaven or hell. And my father used to sit in one room reading, his nose in a book, being antisocial and getting drunker, while my mother was in the kitchen being Martha. Couldn't sit down. And I was the go-between. I was three younger sisters. I was always the go-between, trying to keep them in some sort of contact, my parents. Now, a go-between is a shuttle. You go to one, then you go to the other, and you go back to the other one. And if a plane is on a shuttle service, it doesn't stay long at any one destination before it's all aboard and back again. So it's quite tiring being a shuttle. Also, it's very lonely, because if you're travelling at 2,000 or 5,000 feet, it's very hard for anyone to be on the same phase, at the same height, accompanying you. So I had the most wonderful interior fantasy world when I was very young. You know, there were goblins and elves in the woods, and an amazing imagination. I once had to intervene when my father went after my mother with a carving knife. That's a rather difficult memory at the age of 12. But it did mean that we got caught up in what is a basic dishonesty in alcoholism, and really in all compulsive problems and sicknesses people have. Before Christmas, a van would come when my father was out at work with the booze for Christmas. I remember there were crates of whiskey, crates of gin, crates of sherry. And one year, I think I was 13, I told the van driver, "I'm sorry, he doesn't live here anymore." And the van driver went off. Of course, huge row the next day, why hadn't it arrived? Well, that was rather dishonest of me. And then occasionally I'd drop a bottle, accidentally on purpose. Does that mean one bottle less for him to drink? Well, you couldn't win, you just bought another. So there was a lack of honesty in the house with each other, and we were terrified of saying the truth because we'd be contradicted, or it would be another excuse for him to drink. Well, when I was ordained, I, for obvious reasons, found it very hard to help people who were drinking because it kicked up too much stuff in me. Instead of listening to the person, I suppose I'd be thinking, oh, I think of your poor wife and children, what are they going through? Until one day, a man came to see me who had been a real wino, a very angry man. And he had seen two men going into the basement of a church. He'd been sleeping out rough in cemeteries in London. In winter, he found a greenhouse. Well, he followed these two men in, thinking they were going for a handout. And when he got in, he found he was in a big room, about 30 or 40 people drinking tea. Tea, if you please. So he sat there muttering about, oh, God, these do-gooders, tea, how wet. I want booze. Any money? No money here. Oh. Anyhow, he sat there in his dejection, and one of the group stood up to give their story. And he heard himself. Because there is an amazing way that an alcoholic alone can be understood well by an alcoholic. Well, he came to see me and was received into the church, and he introduced me to the whole world of the 12th Step Programme, which I find one of the most deeply spiritual programmes in the world. Not just for those with compulsions and illnesses, like alcoholism or drugs, but for sanity. And since then, I used to give weekends on the 12 steps to various groups. They're one of the happiest weekends I've ever spent with people. In the parish I was in, we had a lovely room. We opened it up for a meeting once a week for Alcoholics Anonymous. It was an open meeting, so I could go. And for me, it was my weekly spiritual refreshment. And I soon learnt that there are four things about this programme and the people I've met that have a lot to teach the church. The first of these four things is this. One, we are all in this together. Alone it is impossible, but together, supporting and understanding each other, we can make it. So even if you've got drink inside you, go straight back to the meeting where you'll be welcomed. And I was amazed how people still suffering, still drinking, were welcomed firmly, but were with enormous love, because everyone understood. Secondly, don't look back. It's full of regrets and pain. Our Lord doesn't want us to look back. When the Jews left Egypt, they kept looking back, thinking of the melons and the pomegranates and the leeks and the belly dancers and the pyramids. So they went wandering around in circles. If a ploughman keeps looking back, he goes all over the place. In fact, the Jews only did the hokey-cokey in the desert for 40 years. They put their right foot in and they put their right foot out and turn about, because they kept looking back. So the first important point about the church and these wonderful groups is we are all in this together. Secondly, don't look back. Thirdly, just for today. This is the sacrament of the present moment. Don't start promising you're not going to drink for the next 40 years. Today, just today, a day at a time, is what they say. And in the spiritual life, that is very important. Not to start jumping jumps before we reach them. Not always looking back, but to be really present. And in prayer, it takes me a while to become really present to the present moment. As we all tend to be a bit dissipated, you know, one eyeball's looking one way, the other eyeball's looking the other way. One leg wants to go to France, the other leg wants to go to America, so we do the splits. One hand gives and the other hand takes. It takes a while to find inner composure and for our inner civil wars to find reconciliation. Because God is. Because God always is. He always was and he always will be, but for the moment, God is. My problem is, I want to be here and now rather than there and then. And I have found in these groups such prayer, such contemplation, such inner serenity, which is something they pray for all the time. So firstly, we are all in this together. Secondly, don't look back. Thirdly, the present moment, just for today. And fourthly, we are all one drink away from ruination. I have never ever heard anyone at an AA meeting condemn anyone else because they're all so poor in spirit, because they're so vulnerable to their first drink. They've been there themselves. They've been to hell, back and forward, sometimes many, many times. Well, that's more than you can say about any group in the church, not condemning. Next week I'll look at some of the 12 steps and show how amazingly spiritual they are for health of mind and body and soul. But I'll end for now with their favourite prayer. It's called the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
Laudetur Jesus Christus.